free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Okay.
It's Tuesday, March the 3rd, 2020, and it is Super Tuesday. We're going to take a look at what's happened. A lot of developments in the last 48 hours after the South Carolina primary on Saturday. And now we have a Super Tuesday just a couple days later, and a lot has happened with endorsements. And we're going to take a look at the so-called moderate, Joe Biden. One of the endorsements that he picked up, which didn't get a lot of press coverage because really nobody cares who Beto O'Rourke endorses. However, you should care. You should care about the fact that immediately after he was endorsed, Biden says, well, I want to put you in charge of gun control, essentially. So there you go. You got the guy who was out there saying that we have to turn in all the guns and, he's going to confiscate the guns. When you look at what the mainstream of the Democrat Party has become, how anti-Bill of Rights it is, how authoritarian it is, how Marxist it has become, there really aren't any moderates left in the Democrat Party. You want to call Joe Biden a moderate because he said, hey, we're going to use jets against anybody that keeps their guns, or people like Eric Swalwell and Beto O'Rourke, we're going to use nukes. Whatever we have to do, we're going to come and confiscate your guns. Now, those are the moderates who are trying to push us towards a civil war. We have essentially fighting that has broken out. It's now gotten violent on the border between Greece and Turkey. And we're going to take a look at the fact that Hillary Clinton is now going to have to testify. That's right. She's now going to have to testify in court as part of this lawsuit that's being run by Tom Fitton and Judicial Watch. This goes back to Benghazi. And I think one of the most interesting things about this lawsuit is how defensive the State Department and the Justice Department are and defending Hillary Clinton and defending Benghazi. I think it tells you all you need to know about the fact that nothing has really changed in those departments, nothing at all. So we're going to take a look at that in depth as well. And we have amazing environmental news that is completely being overlooked by the left. We have had 3 million acres of soybeans alone destroyed by a new Monsanto product. It's not actually new. I reported about this a few years ago. Farmers across the country were freaked out about something they called dicamba drift. This is a new, more toxic, virulent form of glyphosate. It kills everything in its path. And they're poisoning the farmland of America. And the left doesn't care. Where is Greta? Where is AOC? Already, if you just look at soybeans alone, they have poisoned an area that is twice the size of Delaware. Let me repeat that. Twice the size of Delaware. Delaware is 1.5 million acres. They have poisoned 3 million acres of soybeans alone. In one particular instance, they completely destroyed a high-profile case that has been one of the first wins against Monsanto, with 2,700 lawsuits filed by farmers. In this first case, you have a peach farmer who had his family's business destroyed because his peach grove has been poisoned by the drifting pesticide, dicamba. We'll be taking a look at that in detail. We had the stock market rolling back yesterday, the biggest day since 2009. You had the Dow Jones average was 1,293 points higher, or about a little over 5%. The S&P 500 was up by 4.5%, as was the NASDAQ. And so this is moving back. We're also going to be taking a look at the coronavirus, and the politics of it is now becoming more important than anything. And the issue as to whether or not there are going to be quarantines, forced vaccinations. We'll take a look at what is being developed for that. We're also going to be joined later in the program. Eric Peters will be our guest, as well as Alex Newman of The New American. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, March the 3rd, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host, and of course today is Super Tuesday. We're going to give you a preview of what to look for today, the latest news from the candidates, and of course there's been a lot of news in the last 48 hours. We've had two candidates drop out. Both Buttigieg and Klobuchar have backed out and then endorsed Joe Biden. And so did Beto O'Rourke, and Joe Biden endorsed Beto O'Rourke's gun control. He had already done that. This is the state of the so-called moderate Democrat Party, but we're going to take a look at headline news before we get into that. You know, we had the stock market come back in a big way yesterday, about 1,300 points, a little over 5% on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, as there are fears of coronavirus. And again, as I've said many times, I'm much more afraid at how this will be used, how it is being used politically, how it is being used economically, how it may be used in terms of quarantines and forced vaccinations against all of us. And just a reminder that anything can happen. We had tornadoes overnight, killed 9 people in just one town in America. Now, that's more. We've had 6 people that have died from the coronavirus in all of America. And they were clustered in a nursing home. Where people are elderly, they have health issues and so forth. And we know that this, like the flu, affects elderly people more. But we had 1.5 times the number of people die from a tornado in one town than from the coronavirus. Are we seeing the stock market being shut down because of that? Are we seeing talks about FEMA quarantining people? And, of course, you know, that is the type of thing that they do during hurricanes and so forth. As I've said before, my son won a contest, North American video contest, talking about freedom. And he contrasted the kinds of draconian measures taken by the federal government and FEMA on a large hurricane on the coast of North Carolina versus a very devastating local tornado that was not too far from us, where the local community handled it all by themselves. You had law enforcement get in where the power lines were down. They cordoned it off. They said, don't come in here. Power lines are down. It's dangerous. They're working on this. But other than that, the government left people alone. And what happened was you had churches volunteering to distribute food. You had businesses giving the food, donating the food, bringing them to church parking lots, people going to the parking lots and picking it up if they could. If they couldn't, you had people at the churches delivering it. That's the way the community handles disasters, not the way the federal government does. And the federal government on the coast was quarantining, keeping people out of their area, except for, of course, the looters, who seemed to somehow find their way in and destroy even more than the hurricane had. And when we look at what happened just recently down in San Antonio in the rodeo, this is on the Drudge Report, got my attention because my wife and I, right after we were first married, we lived in Houston, and we used to go to the Saturday night rodeo on a regular basis just out of town. And they've got a rabid cow at the Texas rodeo, may have infected attendees. So you never know what you're going to pick up anywhere. I mean, nobody was eating bat soup. This is a rabid cow. And you come in contact with it, you can get rabies. I remember when we had the Saturday night rodeo and it was in Symington. Some of you may remember that. It was a lot of fun. And we went to North Carolina and had all these animal rights activists. That was one of my first exposures to animal rights activists, was at a little rodeo in North Carolina. It wasn't a big deal. They didn't do a lot of rodeos in North Carolina like they do in Texas. And I thought, what are they talking about? I mean, we went, like I said, almost every Saturday we'd go to the rodeo. The animals are not being harmed. It was the people who are getting clobbered. I tell you, you try to ride a bull and you get pinned up against the fence, head-butted against the fence. I saw people out in the Easy Money event. They had a bull they called Cocaine. It was a Brahma bull. It had a very bad disposition. And they would tie a little rope around its neck, and if you wanted to put your money in the pot, you could try to get that off of its neck. And that pot got to be pretty big because most of the time people didn't make it, even if they're trying to do strategies. One person working in a team, one person distracts it, the other one doesn't. But I saw guys get flipped way up in the air, like a Looney Tunes cartoon. One of them, head over heels, about 10 feet in the air, no exaggeration, landed on his feet, running like a Looney Tunes cartoon, right over the fence. And then, of course, when I saw this rabid cow, the Texas Rodeo, I remember there was one particular cow that they called April Showers. And, it was a horse. It was a horse, and the bronking horse. And every week it was there. And they would announce April Showers was coming up. And the people who went on a regular basis would know not to sit in the first one or two rows. Because April Showers had a bladder issue. That's why they called her April Showers. And she would basically spray everybody in the first four or five rows if you were in the wrong direction. She was kicking up her heels. And they would even do it as a joke. They would introduce visiting foreign dignitaries that were sitting in the first couple of rows in one area. And the crowd, the people around us would kind of go, ooh, they don't know what's coming. So when I look at the rodeo, when I look at the rabid cow, it's just an example of what can happen as we go through life. We don't know what the risks are. And speaking of rabid cows, we have Hillary Clinton has now been ordered to give sworn deposition after a federal judge has tossed what he called a preposterous defense. Now, this is the Judicial Watch case, Judicial Watch versus the U.S. Department of State. And here we are, nearly completely through President Trump's first term, and the U.S. State Department is still defending Hillary Clinton over Benghazi, still conspiring with the Justice Department to hide her criminal actions with the private server and the Clinton email scandal. As a matter of fact, it was this lawsuit from Judicial Watch trying to get information about Benghazi that uncovered the Hillary Clinton email scandal in the first place. I want to play for you a video clip of Tom Fitton on with Lou Dobbs talking about this. Let's run video clip number four.
The objections of the Justice Department and State Department, they were in court in December against us on this very issue, trying to shut the inquiry down. We got one or two attorneys on our side. I'm sitting there. On the other side are six attorneys with the government and four lawyers for Hillary Clinton and her aides. And thankfully, the judge overruled the objections to further questioning here, because we have had more evidence come out as a result of discovery. In this case, this is the case, by the way, Lou, that broke open the Clinton email scandal way back in 2015. Right. It's about Benghazi talking points. And, you know, the judge wants to know, what was Hillary Clinton thinking when she was using this system as it relates to the Freedom of Information Act? He wants to know about whether there are document issues related to Benghazi. And her top aide, Cheryl Mills, also has to be questioned. He also authorized us to subpoena Google, because there's this issue about whether one of her email aides or vendors had sent all of her emails to a Google account. So this is a broadening inquiry. It's limited in scope. We can't get to ask every question under the sun we might want to.
Yeah, exactly. Now, he's there, and they've got a team of people who are lined up against him. I think, if I counted correctly, 10 lawyers from the government and two of them. Because why do we have the entire State Department and Justice Department doing this? Well, because the bureaucracy does not change. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Super Tuesday. And we'll talk a little bit about this idea of Operation Chaos. Folks, I'm going to stress to you how important it is to make sure that you show up to support people who are local law enforcement, local sheriffs who are going to support you, who believe in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, that you show up to support Republicans, or maybe if you can find them, a Democrat that actually believes the same thing, believes in some kind of individual liberty. If you don't support those people, if you put all of your bets on getting some savior into the presidency, it isn't going to happen, and this is evidence of that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. All right, I want to take a look at Super Tuesday and why you should pay attention to your local races today. I'm going to give you a very, very important example in a sheriff's race that's here in Texas. It's now become a national news story because of the Drudge Report. But before we do, I just want to spend a little bit more time on Hillary Clinton being ordered to give a sworn deposition by this judge yesterday. Not only have they fought tooth and nail for a couple of years, this goes back to 2015, but discovery didn't begin until December of 2018. Once they did some discovery, judge there, Judge Lamberth, allowed Judicial Watch to explore whether Clinton's use of a private email server was intended to circumvent the Freedom of Information Act, or what else was it intended to circumvent, right? Pretty much everything. Circumvent the law. Circumvent national security requirements and regulations that she was informed of as the head of the State Department. The law that she violated. The court ruled that the Clinton email system was, quote, one of the gravest modern offenses to government transparency. Now, that's putting it mildly, but that is true. The State and Justice Departments continue to defend Clinton's and the agency's email conduct, and they do to this very day. Yesterday in court, the judge overruled Clinton and the State Department and the so-called Justice Department. Again, they were all there. You heard Tom Fenton. He said, I was there, another guy. And counting the lawyers from State and Justice and Hillary's lawyers, there's like 10 lawyers against us. But what the judge said was, he said, discovery up to this point has brought to light a noteworthy amount of relevant information, but Judicial Watch requests an additional round of discovery, and understandably so. With each passing round of discovery, the court is left with more questions than answers. He also said that he is bothered by the fact that Clinton and the State Department and the Justice Department want this discovery to end. It's called a cover-up, Judge. Lock her up, Judge. There is still more to learn, he said. Even though many important questions remain unanswered, the Justice Department inexplicably still takes the position that the court should close discovery and rule on dispositive motions. The court is especially troubled by this. To argue that the court now has enough information to determine whether State conducted an adequate search is preposterous, said the judge. The judge. Especially when considering State's deficient representations regarding the existence of additional Clinton emails. Instead, the court will authorize a new round of discovery, said Judge Lambert. He also found that Clinton's prior testimony given by written depositions was not sufficient. And so he wants her to show up in person. In person. The court has considered the numerous times in which Secretary Clinton said she could not recall or remember certain details in her prior interrogatory answers. In a deposition, it's much more likely that plaintiff's counsels could use documents and other testimony to attempt to refresh her recollections. And so, to avoid the unsatisfying and inefficient outcome of multiple rounds of fruitless interrogatories, and to move this almost six-year-old case closer to its conclusion, Judicial Watch will be permitted to clarify and to further explore Secretary Clinton's answers in person and immediately after she gives them. In other words, she's going to be forced to testify and cross-examine under oath. The court agrees with Judicial Watch. It is time to hear directly from Secretary Clinton. This is big news, folks. It's big news. We've got one person, one judge in Washington who cares about the law against the entire Trump Department of State and the entire Trump Justice Department. And let's understand, I call it that because he should have cleaned house by now. And that probably includes Attorney General Barr, who's not doing anything with this. Are you kidding me? Barr's out there saying, Trump's making it difficult for me to do my job when Trump talks about the political persecution of Roger Stone and the perjury trap. What is Barr's job? As a longtime Bush insider, is his job there to guard the Department of Justice from President Trump? Is that his job? Certainly is looking like that, isn't it? All right, let's go on to Super Tuesday today. And, you know, we have a lot of talk from various people about Operation Chaos. There are several states in which you can go and you can vote in either primary. But in most of these states, if you decide that you want to, if you're a Republican, registered Republican, yeah, you can still vote in the Democrat primary. But if you vote in the Democrat primary, you're going to be choosing not just the president, but you're going to be choosing other Democrats in the primary. And you're not going to have a choice on the Republican side. There may be some states where that's not the case, but I think that's generally the case. And so if you think that it's a cool idea to go in and try to promote Bernie Sanders, I'm not a fan of that, quite frankly. I like going straight ahead. I don't like these kind of back, you know, behind the back political Machiavellian operations. I like to tell people where I'm coming from, and I like to come at them straight ahead. I don't like to stab people in the back. And what happens when you use that kind of a process? First of all, you're telling people that there's more support out there for Marxists than there really is if you support Bernie Sanders. Secondly, you don't really know who's going to match up best against President Trump. If you think that Bernie's going to be a weaker candidate, you want to vote for him in the local elections. But the real issue is that you're not making the important decision. The most important decisions typically are happening at the primary level. That's where we lose the good candidates, is at the primary level. And if you don't let these people advance and you wind up having a choice at the general election between dumb and dumber, between choosing the lesser of two evils, the establishment Republican or the Democrat socialist. And that's just not good enough. And let me give you an example of this. We have in Texas this article from the Star-Telegram. It was picked up by the Drudge Report out of Fort Worth. And they're going on and on about this organization, a revolution-minded, conspiracy-bent militia group. Who in the world would that be? They're talking about the Oath Keepers here. That's how they're identifying the Oath Keepers. And of course, if you have any question about the label that's been applied to them by the Anti-Defamation League, the Anti-Conservative, Anti-Liberty League, if you have any questions about that, well, just the very fact that Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers have been on the Alex Jones show many times. Oh, that's it. Okay, well, they're a hateful group, right? And the gist of this article is about a local race, several local races, where the Oath Keepers have sheriffs who are saying, we're not going to support rounding up people into concentration camps or FEMA camps and say, this is just crazy. Who's talking about this? You might want to take a look at all the coronavirus panic that's out there. That's the mainstream media is talking about it. At the same time, they say, we're not coming from your guns, but if we do, we've got jets and nuclear weapons and the military, and we'll use them against you. These people. We'll have more on this when we come back. Stay with us.
Reverse engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. So let's take a look at how important it is for you to vote in today's primaries. And I'm not even talking about the presidential stuff. All we do is we talk about presidential elections. Let's talk about what is really at stake if you want to remain free. And I mean free. Not locked up in some kind of a FEMA detention camp. Not having a gang of armed thugs, red flag and SWAT team your house to steal your guns. You're going to need to have an Oath Keeper. You're going to need to have a constitutional sheriff to make sure that this doesn't happen in your town. And that's why you have this story being put out here in Texas, the Star-Telegram out of Fort Worth. And they say the Oath Keepers, their current recruiting pitch focuses on gun rights and the Second Amendment. But unlike other gun libertarians, Oath Keepers promote paranoid fears of the New World Order and spread veiled anti-Semitism in distrusting elites. See, if you talk about the elites or you talk about globalists, they say, well, you're talking about you're anti-Semitic. they're the ones who are saying that all of the globalists and all the elites are Jews, not us. That's them. And then they go on to say, similar to the discredited Austin showbiz personality, Alex Jones. Yeah. So here you go. This is the Anti-Defamation League, so-called, but they're the Anti-Freedom League. They watch militias and so-called patriot group movements. And so they said, the problem is that we have a national director of Las Vegas-based Oath Keepers, John D. Shirley, moved to rural Hood County in 2015, has been appointed by county commissioners as a constable, and he is now running for office. Oh, imagine that. They said founder Stuart Rhodes, just to give you an idea of how radical Oath Keepers is, right? Stuart Rhodes, who I've interviewed multiple times. Stuart Rhodes had worked and campaigned for Ron Paul, a gun libertarian Republican. That's the way they identify him, a gun libertarian Republican. What is that? I don't know what a gun libertarian is. I didn't know any libertarians, no matter where they were on other issues, that didn't support the Second Amendment. A gun libertarian Republican. They said officially Oath Keepers are nonpartisan and non-discriminatory, but the ADL, the anti-defamation, anti-democracy, actually is what it is, labels the group as anti-government extremists. Let me tell you who the anti-government extremists are. It's people like Biden and Beto and Booty and Betty and Bloomberg. The killer bees, these people who want to kill the Bill of Rights, those are anti-Bill of Rights extremists. Why are we not talking? You ever seen in print anywhere? You ever heard any radio host talk about anti-Bill of Rights extremists? Because that's the mainstream establishment is anti-Bill of Rights. That's why they don't call them extremists. But these people are extremely against the Bill of Rights in every respect. Whether you're talking about free speech, the free press, the right to keep and bear arms and defend yourself, it doesn't matter. They're against all of that. They're against due process. They're against search warrants. They're against all of that. They are the extremists. They are the extremists. In a January 22nd speech posted on Oath Keepers Facebook page, Stuart Rhodes, they said, this is really damning, claimed that Americans have a legal right to use the same weapons as the U.S. military. Can you imagine somebody saying something like that? He said, a weapon of war is what you want in your hands. He said, they know we will resist, and that's precisely why they want your semi-automatic rifles, because they're useful in resisting tyranny. See, the idea that Americans should not have the same weapons as the U.S. military, that was the same idea that King George had. And that was why he sent the troops to get the state-of-the-art rifles, not muskets, state-of-the-art rifles, and the cannons that were conquered in Lexington, because he didn't want them to have those state-of-the-art military weapons in their hands. The Oath Keepers' mantra is a list of 10 orders we will not obey, such as turning cities into concentration camps or forcing Americans into detention camps. And they go on to say in here, neither seems likely in Hood County. Oh, okay, so you don't have to worry about the coronavirus panic, right? You don't have to worry about being forced into detention camps or concentration camps or quarantines. You don't have to be concerned about a bunch of government thugs showing up with Bill Gates' latest vaccine that he, you know, spewed out of the lab last week, and he wants to test it on you. Or maybe he's already tested it and he knows what it's going to do. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that, do you? Just cross over and vote on the Democrat side for Bernie Sanders. That'll be a lot of fun, won't it? And you can just forget about any constitutional sheriffs on the ballot in Hood County or anywhere else. Because we don't need to worry about that. President Trump's got it covered. Yeah, right. That's why nothing's been done for the entire term on some of these major issues. Like even coming after Hillary Clinton. He's still got his State Department and his Justice Department defending Hillary Clinton. He's got his FDA telling you you can't use your own stem cells to cure your own disease because they're in control of the big pharmaceutical companies and telling you, well, you just better get the shot. When we're talking about measles, what do you think President Trump's going to do when they put all this political pressure as they're doing for the coronavirus? You think he's going to virtue signal to them like he did with bump stocks? Yeah, that's coming up before the Supreme Court today. Yeah. Actually, I think they had their ruling on it. You know what they're going to say. Oh, yeah, sure. We can ban anything, right? We don't care what the Constitution says. Anyway, they go on to say, after newer and stricter Virginia gun laws, Rhodes said in a speech, we are being pushed toward a revolutionary war. Why is he the one who is singled out? Like I said, when you got Joe Biden saying, yeah, we'll use the jets against you. You got Eric Swalwell saying, we'll use nukes against you. And you got the Virginia governor saying, we'll use all the law enforcement in Virginia. And any of these law enforcement officers out there who say they're going to turn on their own people, we'll make sure they don't get a pension and we'll remove them from office. You better stand with these people. And today is the day you better stand with them. You better pay attention to what's on the ballot. It's going to be your local officials and your state officials that are really going to be your only chance to stop this out-of-control federal government. Let me tell you something. The federal government, if you haven't noticed, we got the Marxism on the left, the radical anti-freedom, and again, no concern whatsoever, even amongst the Republicans, about the Bill of Rights. You're not going to get any help from Washington. They're not going to give you back the freedom that they lied to steal. They're not going to give that back. And if you want to start taking it back, you're going to have to elect some local officials of the backbone who are going to say, not on my watch. It's one of the reasons why I had Roy Moore on this program. You want to talk about Roy Moore versus Jeff Sessions? You talk about a spineless bureaucrat, Jeff Sessions, up against somebody who's been thrown out multiple times because he said we have separation of powers and we have principles and we have a constitution in Alabama. And we're not going to let the Supreme Court shut that down? If you don't elect people like that at the state level, if you don't elect people like that at the national level, you're going to get what you deserve. And so they show this person who they say, this is a constable, and we got to get rid of this constable here. I think he's running for sheriff. Anyway, he wrote that the Oath Keepers shouldn't be called anti-government, John Shirley did, because he said, I'm a public servant of the government. And he said, the U.S. Constitution, the document this organization holds as sacrosanct, is the foundational document of our government. See, this is now dangerous anti-government talk. If you talk about the Constitution, that is dangerous, radical anti-government talk. That's how far we've gone from the establishment, media, press, government, and the federal government. And when you look at the other people that are on the ballot, they said, have you heard of these people? Well, I've heard of them, but I'm not part of the organization, or I'm just not going to say anything at all. That's the other cowards that are on the ballot in Hood County. That's right. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Going to get into what's going on with Biden as well as the other candidates here on Super Tuesday as people are already voting. I just told you the most important thing you're going to find in the primaries are honest, non-establishment candidates that typically get thrown out at the primary level. And we wind up with these establishment candidates where there is no difference whatsoever between the Democrats and Republicans. Now is the opportunity. Today is the opportunity to do something about that on Super Tuesday. But we'll talk about the presidential issues because these people are setting the tone for the party. And it also reflects, as we see how many individuals are sending money to Bernie Sanders, it reflects the change in the American mind embracing socialism and Marxism of Bernie Sanders as they send money to have their... Evidently, he's right. We've got a lot of people who are delighted to have their taxes raised. Except, you know, that's not really why they're sending him money. They think that he's going to raise the taxes of other people, and they're going to get rich and get benefits using other people's money. That's the big con game that's always run by these politicians, especially the socialists. But let's take a quick look at what's going on with the coronavirus. We have, as Breitbart pointed out, HBO's John Oliver spends 18 times more time on air trashing President Trump for the coronavirus outbreak than he does China. He spent just 20 seconds talking about the cover-ups in Beijing, but he has spent 18 times that coming after President Trump. As a flashback, World Tribune points out, just remember that when we had the swine flu, the H1N1, and I pointed out that, you know, Joe Biden said, oh, this is pretty bad. I'm not getting on any airplanes. And they immediately came back and had Joe Biden do a retraction. I overspoke. I don't want to panic anybody about this stuff, right? And there wasn't anything to be panicked about with H1N1. I had it. I've had worse flus in my life than the H1N1 swine flu. But let's just go back and look at what we were told at the time and what happened and how people reacted to it. As World Tribune points out, 6 months and 1,000 deaths later, Obama declared a public health emergency for H1N1 swine flu. At the end of April 2009, Obama addressed Americans briefly and said that the U.S. health officials are monitoring the situation. He said he had requested $1.5 billion from Congress to support the government's efforts. However, in October of 2009, 6 months earlier, the director of the CDC told CNN, quote, millions of people in the U.S. have been infected. At least 20,000 have been hospitalized and more than 1,000 have died. And that was 6 months before Obama did anything about it. As a matter of fact, even when you have Joe Biden say, well, I'd exercise a little bit of caution. I don't know about flying. Oh, don't say that. You'll pull the economy down. We don't want the economy to go down. Oh, they want the economy to go down now, don't they? Few, if any, Democrats complained about Obama's handling of the outbreak. Now, in comparison, you know, even though John Oliver doesn't want to talk about China or these other late-night comedians slash political commentators, President Trump declared coronavirus a public emergency on January the 31st, 1 month after China first reported the coronavirus to the World Health Organization, December 31st, 2019. And he's done a lot of things besides that. It doesn't concern me that President Trump hasn't done enough. What concerns me is that President Trump will be goaded into virtue signaling that he's going to do something and to allow very dangerous procedures to be pushed on us. We have President Trump touting that progress is being made on a vaccine. He said, we're talking about a vaccine, maybe even a cure, he said, ahead of a meeting with pharmaceutical executives. That's what concerns me. That and the quarantine that may be coming out, because we now have FDA officials say they expect 1 million coronavirus tests to be available by the end of the week. So let the quarantines begin, because you know what's going to happen as soon as they get these tests out. And we've already had the tests put out and then recalled. Why? Because they were garbage. They were giving false positives. They were giving false negatives. But you get a positive from one of these tests, and they tell us, oh, well, now we fixed it. And we not only fixed it, but we were able to fix it and manufacture a million of them, just like that. You know, those bad ones that we had before, they're all gone. That's not going to happen. These will be 100% effective. And once you test positive, you're going to be whisked away into quarantine. FEMA, the FDA is preparing the tests, be available by the end of the week. The FEMA is preparing the declaration of emergency, as well as the various camps to load you in, assuming that the president is going to be there, providing the funds and authorizing the vaccines, as they've been training the federal bureaucracy and all these different military and health bureaucrats on an annual basis with their bio weapon or bioterrorism war games. This thing got out of control and everybody's dead because you didn't act quickly enough. you were not draconian enough in your measures, and you were too reluctant to use untested vaccines on people. It's just all your fault. Everybody died. That's the bottom line of every one of these simulations that they run every year. But people in the military, people in the CDC, people in the different health institutes in Washington. And here's this pronouncement. CDC says 32 million Americans will be ill with the flu this season and 18,000 deaths. This is on Breitbart. Now, of course, this is their coronavirus projections that they're putting out there. Just understand that this doesn't ever change. If we look at the data off of the CDC website, we take a look at this and they say, well, the CDC estimates that from October the 1st, 2019 through February the 22nd, 2020. And so we're talking about what? 4 months? We're talking about actually maybe 5 months because you're starting at the beginning of October, the end of February. So what are they saying? Well, they said, we think between 32 million and 45 million flu illnesses. Well, that's pretty wide. That's a pretty big variation. That's because it's a seat-of-the-pants estimate. And then you go down through it and you look at how many medical visits from the flu that they estimate. Again, 14 million to 21 million. Part of this is because, as I've pointed out before with vaccine safety advocates, they tell doctors, don't even bother with the tests that we have for the flu. Just if they got cold symptoms, just diagnose them that way. That's what they're going to be doing, except now if they just feel like, well, maybe I think they might have the coronavirus, you get whisked off to the camps. And then when they talk about flu deaths, listen to this, 18,000 to 46,000. Well, that's a real big variation. When I look at something and they say, well, it's anywhere from 18 to 46, I say, you have no idea then, do you? You're just making this stuff up. But folks, this can be very, very dangerous. Very, very dangerous. You just take a look at what quarantine looks like in China as they are pushing President Trump to do that very thing, same thing here. That's why, even though I have my reservations about the seriousness of this disease, and I do believe from the indications, the narrative that they came up with about bat soup and so forth with the bioweapons safety level 4 lab that was right there, where they were experimenting on coronavirus and bats, and then they started saying, well, this got out of here, and we think that maybe it was the bat soup and so forth. And then you had the information came out that, yeah, they were selling animals. I think they put all that stuff together, and I think they overreacted. But perhaps it is dangerous. One way or the other, I want to make sure that my family has the kind of products that we need to support our health, and I want to make sure that I've got the capability to stay out of the clutches of FEMA. I don't want to be put into isolation quarantine. That is the most dangerous aspect of this. And so that's why so many Americans are prepping, and we are getting unprecedented amounts of orders for the select storable food at InfoWarsStore.com. We are now, at this point, potentially 8 weeks or more in rare cases, and it's getting longer. So make sure you secure your supply of storable food. If you don't use it now, it's going to be there for 25 years, non-GMO, made in America, and it's going to insulate you against economic disruption or against natural emergencies. InfoWarsStore.com. We'll be right back.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Coming up in this next hour, we're going to be talking about Super Tuesday. We'll be talking about Biden has now been buoyed coming out of South Carolina. Picked up 3 endorsements, even people who are no longer around, like Beto O'Rourke. Like, hey, remember me? No, we don't. Quite forgettable. Anyway, he even came out and endorsed Biden last night. So there's been a lot of people. What he did not get was he didn't get an endorsement from Obama. Obama, where art thou, bro? as I said yesterday. It's like, come on, man, I need your help. Well, he's getting the help from the people who are jockeying for position, either on the ticket or in the administration. One person who is not sucking up to Joe Biden or to the military-industrial complex, who is still on the ballot, is Tulsi Gabbard. In the South Carolina primary, Tulsi only got 1.3% of the vote, and as BracingViews.com points out, is due in part to her outcast status among the Democrat establishment. People like MSNBC and CNN constantly attacking her. As a matter of fact, as CNN was dumping on Tulsi Gabbard, I can't understand why she's still in. And so Anderson Cooper, Mr. CIA, said, well, I think she's angling for a job with Fox News, as opposed to angling for a job with Biden. Anyway, by running in the election, as Bracing News points out, and this is on Zero Hedge, by running in the election, Tulsi Gabbard continues to make an invaluable contribution. She highlights the power of the military-industrial congressional media complex and its rejection of any candidate who is willing to challenge it, its narrative. As he points out, Mayor Pete plays ball with big donors, and he parrots talking points of the industrial complex, or we should say the Silicon Valley complex, the military complex. Tulsi doesn't. In a recent op-ed piece for The Hill, she did America yet another service by calling out red baiting in America's elections. She says in her op-ed piece, the American people have the right to know this information in order to put Russia's alleged interference, quote unquote, into proper perspective. It's a mystery why the intelligence community would want to hide these details from us. Instead, it's relying on highly dubious and vague insinuations filtered through its preferred media outlets, which seem designed to create a panic rather than to actually inform the public about a genuine threat. All this does is to undermine the voters' trust in our elections, which is what we are constantly told is the goal of Russia. As I pointed out yesterday, she said, yeah, the U.S. intelligence bureaucracy are really the ones who are threatening the freedom of our election. They're the ones who really want to do the hacking. And I told you, and I've told you many times, I've been more specific even than Tulsi Gabbard has, but it's important that she say it as well. The hacking is going to be done through Election Guard. This is funded $10 million, the entire budget of one small company that's coming up with something called Election Guard. They're going to guard the election, just like the Democrats guarded the election there in the Iowa caucus with the Shadow app. They're going to say, well, we made a mistake, and it's been hacked, and it must have been hacked by the Russians. Yeah, that's it. It's the Russians. Would you believe? We're going to have a Maxwell Smart post-election explanation. Well, it was hacked, you know, even though we had this election guard out here. The chief and I were right on this, but, you know, my shoe phone was not working. So we had to look. They have shut down free speech. They've shut down social media using NewsGuard. Now they're going to manipulate the election, not just by manipulating the information, which they do with their censorship and with NewsGuard. They're going to directly manipulate the votes. That's why DARPA and the military-industrial complex has put in Election Guard. Yeah, it'd be better than having Tulsi Gabbard on Fox News as a consultant. It'd be better to see her replace that lying piece of excrement, Mike Pompeo. President Trump should hire her, not Fox News. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Yeah, as I was saying about Tulsi Gabbard, if President Trump really wants to impress on people that he seriously wants to get out of Afghanistan, that he seriously wants to bring the troops home, which is one of the reasons why many of us supported him the first time through, that hasn't happened because he's been opposed by the military-industrial complex. If instead of letting Tulsi Gabbard stay in Congress or become a Fox News commentator, whatever, if that's really something she wants to do. That was Anderson Cooper saying that. But really, if President Trump wanted to seriously stop these wars, he couldn't do better than to put somebody like Tulsi Gabbard in place. Because as he's talking about this Afghan peace process with the Taliban and so forth, you've immediately got Pompeo out there trash talking it. Well, I don't know. I don't think it's going to work. We've got to win this. Well, Mike, why don't you give us a definition of what winning looks like? Because for 20 years, we haven't had that. We've had 3,500 soldiers, American soldiers die. Who knows how many Afghans have died? Who knows how much money has been spent? Because we can't get the truth about that, even remotely, out of the Pentagon. Because they got people like Mike Pompeo, who think that now that they're in power, it is their responsibility to lie, cheat, and steal, and to give classes on how to do it to the people in the bureaucracy. And you got conservatives laughing about that and applauding it. That's not funny when that's exactly what they're doing. It'd be funny if they weren't doing that and he made a joke like that, but that's exactly what they are doing. So yeah, put Tulsi Gabbard in there, President Trump, and people would take you seriously thinking that you really do want to end this. So you got people like Mike Pompeo still around there as your inner circle. I don't believe you want to end this war in Afghanistan or any of the other wars, quite frankly. Rand Paul, meanwhile, is urging President Trump to reconsider the mass surveillance program that is now up for reauthorization. And it's not just Rand Paul. We got ACLU and FreedomWorks are all talking about this as well. But let's take a look at what Rand Paul said first. According to a Politico report, President Trump told Rand Paul that he is not in favor of an extension of these expiring surveillance authorities. He's not in favor of extending the surveillance that was used against him, by the way. Now, maybe that was a wake-up call. When these out-of-control, the real government, the military-industrial complex, when they come after President Trump and they try multiple times to overthrow our election after the election, can you only imagine what they're going to do with Election Guard? But when you look at what was done to President Trump, if he doesn't shut this down, then he has been co-opted or he has absolutely no sense. And I don't think that he has no sense. He cast doubts on the future of the program because he said President Trump told him that he's not in favor of extending the surveillance. Rand Paul told reporters that Trump talked to him about the matter last Wednesday, February the 26th. And that was a day after Attorney General Barr told GOP senators that Congress should extend the surveillance. So that's what I'm saying. I don't trust Barr. I never did. You go back and look at the archives. As soon as his name was floated, I said, look at this guy's history. He is a CIA crony of George H.W. Bush. He is a very dangerous man. He appears to be defending President Trump against these nonsense impeachment charges. And I've said at the time, I believe these impeachment charges were being used not only by the bad cops, the people like Pelosi and others, but I believe that they were being used as leverage against President Trump by people like Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell. They were the good cops. We're here to protect you against those evil impeachment charges from Nancy Pelosi. But don't try to pull the troops out of Afghanistan or doing this other stuff, seriously. And Lindsey Graham pretty much just said that. Anyway, so you had William Barr telling GOP senators in Congress that we don't want to do that. We want to keep this going. And this is the guy whose department, as I mentioned in the last hour, is still defending Hillary Clinton and her email corruption and her Benghazi actions. You know, Attorney General Barr still has got his people just yesterday show up in court to try to shut down the investigation of Hillary Clinton and email stuff. Won't do anything to shut down the persecution of Roger Stone. And won't do anything to shut down the corrupt surveillance system that is in violation of not only U.S. law. The way the FISA system was abused is a violation of the FISA Act itself, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act itself, as well as the Constitution and due process, as well as trying to overthrow the election in a coup. Anyway, when asked about the differing perspectives between his conversation, Rand Paul's conversation with President Trump, and Barr's comments to the senators, Paul said there was, quote, misinformation that got out from some people in the administration, unquote, about the expiring surveillance authorities. Rand Paul went on to say, FISA warrants should not be issued against Americans. As a matter of fact, that's exactly what the FISA law says. It says you can get these warrants. We want to be able to spy on bad actors, but you can't do that to Americans, whether they're in this country or another country. And you can't do it to foreign actors who are in this country. You can only do it to foreigners in foreign countries. And yet they did it against the president and against his staff. And they're doing it to Mr. and Mrs. Verizon. Dragnet surveillance against you. You. That's what you should be upset about. I said this long before they used it against the president to try to overthrow the election. FISA warrants should not be issued against Americans, said Rand Paul. Americans shouldn't be spied on by a secret court. And I think he, that is President Trump, agrees completely with that. And that's the amendment that I'm going to insist on. I'm not letting anything go easy without a vote on my amendment. And he said that the day after Attorney General Barr went to the Senate and said, everything is good. We want to extend this. Well, actually, he did that on Tuesday. Rand Paul met with President Trump on Wednesday, and then he made that statement on Thursday. Paul's conversation with Trump could derail plans being pushed by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to extend these powers. Again, there's Mitch McConnell on the wrong side of the Constitution, on the wrong side of the Bill of Rights, on the wrong side of the FISA law itself. Trump and his Twitter comments that annoyed Barr, you know, in this last month, making it impossible for him to do his job. I look at that and I say, well, you know, what is his job? It's his job to maintain the rule of the military-industrial complex, the rule of the surveillance state, the rule of the CIA, and I think, quite frankly, it is. I always felt that was his job and why this Bush appointee was put in place. And it's not just Rand Paul. We have the ACLU on the left and FreedomWorks on the right coming together to urge Trump to reform the rogue FBI. Let's play that ad that they have taken out, video clip number 8.
Now we know the truth. A rogue FBI illegally spying on Americans and spying on Carter Page, a Trump campaign advisor.
We should not subject our political campaigns to secret courts, to secret warrants and secret surveillance.
Now that we know the truth, we must reform our surveillance laws. President Trump, as Congress considers the Patriot Act, tell him to rein in a rogue FBI and reform our surveillance laws so that this never happens again. Brought to you by FreedomWorks and the ACLU.
Wow. That's very, look, let's understand. There are people who want liberty, and those alliances transcend party, party loyalty. You know, FreedomWorks, a very Republican organization, ACLU, wrong on many issues, quite frankly. Wrong on many issues. They've constantly fought against the free exercise of religion. But look, we better stop this surveillance. We better stop the rogue government that is out there, the surveillance state that is out there, that operates like a star chamber. That's why we had the Bill of Rights in the first place, because the founders knew what a star chamber looked like. They had experienced the same thing, and we're now repeating history. We're now going back to something that is characteristic of the Dark Ages, and that's one of the reasons why they called it the Dark Ages, that unrestrained power. Yeah, the question is, who watches the watchers? I would say the better answer would be, take away the watchers' spyglasses. That's really what needs to be done. Not a reform. Shut these son of a guns down. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're going to be taking a look at the 48 hours. The last 48 hours has happened here. This all happened, interestingly enough, in Dallas. Biden went to Dallas. And this is not about putting moderates in, regardless of what CNN and MSNBC and all these other. This is not a moderate revolution. These people are not moderates. I mean, they're talking about open civil warfare to take your guns. They're talking about socialist programs that are just as big and as widespread as Bernie Sanders. It's just that they're not defending Castro. See, Bernie Sanders, like AOC, doesn't really shy away from the labels of socialism and Marxism. They don't shy away from allying themselves with the Soviet Union or with Fidel Castro. And that's what makes them dangerous to the Democrat Party. But their issues are no different from the open, avowed Marxists that are out there at the top of the ticket. It's just that's going to be more damaging for them politically. They want to be able to enact these things in a pattern of stealth. So they've got to stop Bernie. And what you saw happening in Dallas yesterday was kind of like a Bernie assassination. I mean, he was taking fire from the grassy knoll and the school book depository. I think even Jack Ruby got a couple of shots at him. So we're going to take a look at this amazing 48 hours. But before we do, I just want to put this in context of just how dangerous this is and how much is on the line, because we've got Rob Reiner, you know, the guy who had one role that he was remembered for, playing himself, a crazed, idiotic, radical leftist on All in the Family. And he was on an MSNBC program called All In. Yeah, they just got rid of the family. You know, they got rid of Archie and Edith and his stage wife. I don't even remember who she was at this point. But it's now just All In. And he's on All In. And this is what the Meathead had to say, video clip number 9.
We are looking at two existential crises, democracy and the world, the earth. Right. If we don't take this presidency away, we're going to lose democracy and we're going to lose our ability to live on the earth. And I want to just remind people, Bush, Gore.
Yes.
And people who are friends of mine said, I'm going to vote for, Ralph Nader. And there's no difference between the candidates. Please, a 20-year start on climate change, and we don't go into Iraq. So, I'm saying you have to unify behind whoever.
You are a meathead. What is it called? A meathead, dead from the neck up. Meathead.
Yeah, that's exactly. He hasn't changed at all, has he? He's just a little bit older, a little bit grayer, maybe a little bit fatter, but he was pretty fat back then. And he hasn't done any other acting jobs because he wasn't acting when he played that role. Yeah, he's directed some stuff because, you know, if you've got political views like his, you're going to be selected to put out some of their propaganda films. But just listen to what he had. If we don't take this presidency away, we're going to lose democracy and we're going to lose our ability to live on the earth. And these are the people who are talking about how they can burn down the Constitution. Lose democracy? Well, let's just talk about the earth here for a moment. Because, as I briefly mentioned at the beginning of the program, we just had a landmark lawsuit about something that you really need to understand that's going on. This is part of modern farming that Michael Bloomberg really doesn't understand, and that's Monsanto. Monsanto has now been ordered to pay $265 million because they destroyed a peach farm, and they did it with their new herbicide. Now, this guy was not using their herbicide on his peach farm, and it had unintended consequences. No, the reason these damages are so high is because they discovered documents from Monsanto that shows that was exactly their purpose. Exactly their purpose. It's a new pesticide, dicamba, and it was set up to take the place of Roundup, glyphosate. And the problem with Roundup and glyphosate wasn't just that people were on to the game. You know, people finally catching up to the idea of just how toxic and persistently toxic Roundup glyphosate is and how they were losing lawsuits on that. No, that's not why they came up with a new product. What happened was glyphosate started to lose its effect. Because what happened was it wasn't 100% effective. And so just like you have resistance to antibiotics, or you have resistance to other pesticides, it's not that the organism, the insect, or the pest or the weed or whatever is evolving. It's just that it's not 100% effective. And so what happens is it kills all of the weeds that don't have some kind of a genetic resistance to it. And then after a few generations, the only weeds that are left are the ones that have a built-in DNA resistance to it. So they're not evolving. They're not turning into some kind of a super rat. That's what always happens. You know, when we talk about antibiotics or we talk about pesticides, it isn't that they're changing into another animal. It's just that we're selecting out the ones that had DNA that were susceptible to this particular antibiotic or this pesticide. And so that's now what's happened. They call it a super weed. Well, it's not a super weed. There's nothing super about it. It's not a stronger weed. It's just, you know, over a period of time, it's a given that they're going to build up, you're going to have a population that is no longer affected by their pesticides. So they came up with a new, more toxic, but different formula weed killer, dicamba. It was first approved for use in 2017. Since then, it has wreaked havoc on millions of acres of non-genetically modified crops across America. It is poisoning America's farmland. Why isn't the meathead, Rob Reiner, concerned about this? Where's Greta on this? Where's all these environmentalists who are so worried? Oh, all the animals are going to die. We're going to be out of food. And we're killing the planet. You know who's killing the planet? Monsanto is killing the planet. They're killing our ability to raise food. And they're poisoning for profit. Literally poisoning for profit. I mean, we created the EPA because we had toxic issues, right? And then the EPA very quickly pivoted to deciding that they were going to be using their power to shut down certain types of energy production and not cleaning up toxic waste sites. And this is example number one as to how useless and how blind these people are, these environmentalists. So they formulated dicamba. And the problem with it, they market it under the trade name, the market name Extendamax, dicamba, Roundup, glyphosate. And the problem is it kills everything in its path. It is more toxic than glyphosate, and it's very dangerous because it converts to a gas and it drifts for miles, killing neighboring crops, poisoning the land. That's why they talk about dicamba drift. I'm not quite finished on this. I'm going to finish up on this when we come back from the break. Then we're going to get into Biden and Super Tuesday. And then we're going to have joining us in the third hour, Eric Peters. Alex Newman has delayed to another day this week. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Mainstream propaganda. This is the David Knight Show.
Glyphosate. We've now had at least three lawsuits, big ticket lawsuits that have now been lost by Monsanto. They've been bought out by Bayer. Change the name so you don't know who's behind it, right? Bayer bought out Monsanto. But the legacy of glyphosate lives on, and so does the chemical in pretty much everything that you eat. You can't escape it now. It's permeated our food supply. And now they have a new, more toxic chemical, dicamba, and it drifts, turns into a gas, and it drifts for miles, killing everything. But just go back for a moment to glyphosate, which was its predecessor. We had a lawsuit for $60 million. Then we had another one for, I think it was $250 million. Then we had the $2 billion lawsuit, people who got cancer from using glyphosate. We've had bans in Austria, the Czech Republic, in Italy, in the Netherlands, in Germany, and then in Vietnam. And when it happened in Vietnam, you had the Trump agricultural secretary, Sonny Perdue, criticize Vietnam and say this is going to be crippling to agriculture worldwide. Let me tell you what's crippling to agriculture worldwide. It's poisoning the soil, which is what these chemicals are doing. I look at this from Vietnam, and it's like, do you think that maybe the fact that the people in Vietnam had experienced Agent Orange developed by Monsanto, and they explained to them, this is kind of like, remember when we dropped Agent Orange on you? Well, that's kind of like this. And that's exactly what dicamba drift is. I mean, it's that kind of poison. I bet it didn't take them but a heartbeat to make that decision. They've been in this dance with Monsanto before. And so when we look at this and the fact that it drifts for miles and kills everything, this particular case that people are talking about now is the $265 million for destroying an entire peach farm. They were not using it. People were using it many, many miles away. This is a very large peach farm, 30,000 trees, all killed because of dicamba drift, this drifting airborne toxic poison. This is Agent Orange for U.S. agriculture. The owners of this peach orchard in Missouri, Bill Bader and his family owned Bader Farms, just won $265 million in court because it destroyed his entire orchard, put him out of business. But you should be concerned because this is affecting your food supply. And a lot of organic farmers are very concerned about this because they had contamination from glyphosate, but dicamba drifts much, much worse than glyphosate. Much, much worse. A jury found that former Monsanto, now owned by Bayer, and chemical giant BASF conspired to create an ecological disaster designed to increase profits at the expense of farmers. Yes, this is the more, even the more damaging thing. It's the fact that they knew this. They knew this was going to drift. They knew that it was going to kill everything that wasn't their genetically modified organism. See, that's a big part of this. It's a combination product. They not only sell glyphosate, but they then sell you genetically modified seeds, soybeans, and cotton, and other products that they've genetically modified to be tolerant of their pesticides. And so if you don't buy their seeds, you're not going to be able to grow anything. It'll completely poison the ground. And then they've got you on the hook. Every year, you've got to buy their seeds. That's why in India, when they did this to the farmers in India, you had them committing suicide by the thousands because they couldn't afford to buy new seeds every year. You know, farmers don't buy new seeds every year, typically, unless they get hooked by Monsanto. And so what Monsanto wanted to do was turn them into sharecroppers, not people who own their farms, not people who own their seeds, but sharecroppers. Have to rent the produce, essentially the seeds from them every year. So this lawsuit is one of 2,700 lawsuits about this particular pesticide that's now against Bayer because they bought Monsanto. Monsanto first announced that it would work with BASF on a new dicamba-ready system back in 2011. Scientists at the time warned that it would threaten farmers growing anything other than Monsanto's GMO soybeans and cotton. Publicly, Monsanto and BASF scoffed at the concerns, but because of these lawsuits, they've now discovered internal communications that show that the companies secretly predicted that there would be thousands of complaints. We now got 2,700. Thousands of complaints about dicamba damage, and they made plans about how they would avoid liability, but it gets worse. The documents expose the companies bragging about how many cotton and soybean farmers would be forced to buy their patented GMO seeds, not because they needed weed control, but as a defensive measure against the drift of this herbicide. They knew they were going to hurt people, and they planned to make money off of it. It's just that simple, said one of the lawyers. They knew they were going to hurt people. And just like we saw with Ford Motor Company, they said, yeah, you know, small part, could have kept these Pinto gas tanks from exploding, whatever. But we decided not to do it because we decided that the lawsuits would be less expensive when people died than it would be to put that part in there. Monsanto did the same thing. They said, eh, we'll deal with the lawsuits besides. On the other hand, we're going to have people who are going to be forced to buy our seeds because they won't be able to handle the herbicide drifting on and poisoning. Problem is, I don't know that they have their GMO peach trees yet. Or pick another crop, right? And I don't want their GMO seeds. But they're poisoning the land. They've destroyed over 3 million acres of soybeans alone. Just the soybean. 3 million acres. And so I looked up. I said, well, you know, what's the land area of the state of Delaware. Delaware is 1.5 million acres. They have already destroyed 2 times the size. They've already poisoned the land, Monsanto and Bayer, with dicamba drift. They've poisoned the land that's equivalent to 2 times the size of Delaware. And that's just for soybeans. That's not counting peach groves with 30,000 peach trees on it. And we've got the Department of Agriculture pushing the pesticides. This is absolutely, this is how, it's called regulatory capture. This is how big pharmaceutical companies, big chemical companies take over the government regulators and use them to push, to browbeat foreign countries to buy this stuff that's going to poison their land so they won't be able to grow anything that isn't provided to them by Monsanto or Bayer. It's absolutely disgusting. And folks, it gets even worse than that. It's not just our food, but it's what they're doing to us in terms of the vaccines and the healthcare issues that they put out. When I talk about stem cells being shut down by President Trump's FDA, they've never in the past claimed that they had any control over biologics. We're talking about stuff that's coming from your body, taking out fat cells out of your own body, putting them in a centrifuge, separating out the stem cells, reinjecting the concentrated stem cells back into your own body that they just took them out of. And the FDA says, no, you're not going to do that. Why are they doing that? Why are they taking off the table the safest and most effective treatment that we have for many, many chronic illnesses that are not treated by pharmaceutical companies? And I'll tell you, the reason is the pharmaceutical companies and these genetic engineering companies, not only do they want to keep selling you the expensive pain medication for these things or the treatments that are out there, but they want to be the ones to provide you with stem cells that are from eternal cell lines. These are things just like we see in the vaccines. They're taken from aborted babies, many of them going back to the 1960s. They never die. Anything that is eternal like that is basically a cancer. They want to do that with the aborted baby stem cells. That's why they're keeping you from using your own. And that's the other part of the federal government. We'll be right back.
Politicians say more taxes will solve everything.
And the band played on.
Yeah, you know, as we look at this, there's a real parallel to the idea that you're not going to have any informed consent when it comes to vaccines or other medications. Stem cells, for example. You know, again, in Japan, what do they have? You know, they don't have as corrupt a government as we do because they don't have as much power as we do. It's the power that creates the corruption. That's why any of these kind of artificial measurements, the fixes that you put on there, like, oh, we're going to have public funding of campaigns. No. It's the power that causes the corruption. It's the power that pulls in the money. It's the power that pulls in these crooks. Because if you can go to Washington, you can basically shut down anybody from stopping this kind of GMO trespass onto your farm. And we saw time and time again, I've reported over for many years, I've talked about this. And you had situations and various farms across the country, farming communities where the farmers understood the issue. See, the most, these environmentalists and Greta, they don't really understand the real threat to the environment. But the farmers did. And they said, and there was a lot of places where they had a lot of organic farmers, and they said, we don't like this glyphosate, which is spreading onto our land. That was before they came up with dicamba, which is drifting for miles and miles and miles. And so they said, we want this banned in this county. And so Monsanto at the time, now they're owned by Bayer. What was their solution? You know, they were getting defeated. They went into one small county and they spent over $8 million and they got defeated in the local election because the farmers knew the issue. They weren't going to be gaslighted by Bloomberg style television commercials, glossy ads talking about this is the wave of the future. You know, Monsanto for years ran the agricultural exhibits at Disney World's Epcot. They tell you, oh, yes, we're going to grow food by science. No, they're poisoning you. They're poisoning you. And so these farmers knew what the issue was, and they shut it down. They didn't care how many millions of dollars they're going to spend on this. And so they were losing one after the other. And so they said, well, we've got to shut this down by going to Washington because that's where the power is. And so they did that. It's called the Dark Act. At least that's what we call it. They've got a different word for it. But they want to basically just ban you knowing that you've got GMO in your food. And so they, you know, said, you can't require that. You can't do this and that. We're going to stop these bans on glyphosate. As a matter of fact, you know, you've got the Secretary of Agriculture now going around and telling other foreign countries, no, you should use Monsanto's toxic poison that's already poisoned. Just in terms of soybeans, it's already poisoned two times the land area of the state of Delaware. And they're just getting started. And so, you know, you ask, well, what about this peach farmer? Was he asked if he wanted to have this? Oh, no. We're not going to get his consent. We're not going to inform him. We're just going to do it. And it's going to kill his trees. And they're just going to do vaccines to you. And they don't care what damage it does to you or to your children. They don't want your informed consent. They don't care if you have ethical issues about vaccines that use or are tested with eternal cell lines that were taken from aborted babies decades ago, cancer cells that are being used in these vaccines. They don't care about that. And they don't care when it comes to the coronavirus because they're preparing. This has all been two things, in my opinion. This has been to attack President Trump in a way that they never came after Obama for any of this. As a matter of fact, it was just the opposite. All the press, the establishment media, were covering for Obama. They weren't doing anything. They didn't want anybody to pay any attention. They didn't want to try to control the spread of these previous flus. Didn't want to panic anybody. Now they do want to panic everybody. And they've been very successful at panicking everybody. And I have questions about the motivations of the Chinese as well. You know, was this a bureaucratic overreaction as they believed that, you know, this had escaped the biosafety level 4 lab there as they found out they were selling animals and this all began in that area? Did they think that this was something that was more virulent than it really is? Did they do this deliberately in order to attack President Trump? Because he is the biggest threat that China has faced since Nixon opened up trade with them and started destroying our own country's economic infrastructure. Nixon, actually. Kissinger rather than Nixon. It's really Kissinger who was president, making all those big decisions. But, you know, when we look at what is coming out, just look at all of the information about the coronavirus vaccine. South Korea to launch a mass coronavirus testing, and U.S. pledges $1 billion for a vaccine. Oh, they're going to make much more than that in terms of profits because we've got a Texas-based genetic engineering company. This is back to February 20th. Oh, they're probably already finished with testing by now, don't you think? Here we are, March the 3rd. This is, you know, they've had at least 2 weeks on this thing, right? Texas-based genetic engineering firm, Grifix, said they'd finished development of their vaccine. And they just had to test it for a couple of weeks before they can roll this out. You know, now they've been working on these vaccines. They've been working on creating the panic. And now they're going to be rolling out the tests by the end of the week. And they're getting the FEMA camps ready. They're getting probably the vaccines ready. They're just going to wait a little bit longer until they can ramp up manufacturing. This is just like the underwear bomber. Anyway, Grifix, among dozens worldwide racing to develop shots and drugs to prevent and to treat the virus. Then you've got another company, Gilead, teamed up with Beijing to test a new antiviral at the epicenter of the virus. This goes back a couple of weeks as well. Israeli scientists, they want to get in on the deal. In a few weeks, we will have a coronavirus, right? Because we got a coronavirus vaccine gap, right? We've all got to get into this. You know, we got a race as to who's going to come out with this thing first and who's going to force it into your arm first because we don't care about informed consent. Harvard genetic research team, they've been working on collecting Chinese blood and DNA samples going all the way back to the U.S. I mean, is this something that's weaponized for a specific people's group? That, by the way, is something that is a part of our bioweapons research. to genetically engineer this for a specific people group. And that should concern everybody. Because it doesn't matter who you are. You could be black. You could be white. You could be Russian. You could be, you name it. There's somebody's put a crosshair on you. Doesn't like you. Jewish, Indian, doesn't matter. There's somebody out there who would like to wipe out all of you. Just pick a group. You've got an enemy. And it just depends on who's going to be engineering this virus to kill a specific group. You're going to have a bioweapon genocide. Look, this is one of the reasons why I want to make sure that I've got storable food. And I'm going to, this is a plug, but this is a warning as well. And we've been warning you about this from the very beginning. One of the first things that we did here at InfoWars, Alex, first product they sold, water filter. I don't apologize for selling people water filters. We told you about the dangerous chemicals in your, and that can include glyphosate, especially if you're in a rural area. It's going to get down into the aquifer as well. These water filters filter out the glyphosate. They filter out dicamba. They filter out toxic chemical spills that you don't find out about. They filter out the stuff that's deliberately put in by the government. You know, the fluoride. They filter out the stuff that's put in there out of government neglect. The lead, like we saw in Flint, Michigan. So I have no qualms whatsoever selling you stuff that's going to help you to protect yourself and your family. I was called on the carpet by the Daily Beast because after a shooting, remember we had that shooting? I'll never forget that. Had a guy goes into the office of in Anchorage, Alaska, and says he believes that he's getting, I'm going by memory, I may be inaccurate on what he told them, but I think he said he was getting voices from the military telling him he needed to go shoot somebody. And they said, oh, that's nice. Have a nice day. Go away. You're bothering us. He subsequently got on a plane and flew from Anchorage down to Florida. Forget where it was in Florida. With a gun. TSA didn't catch it, of course, with their the machines that they put in after the underwear bomber false flag. So he's able to fly from Anchorage to Florida with a gun. And he gets in the luggage claim area and he starts shooting people. And so when I covered that story, I said, well, at the very least, what you could do is protect yourself by getting the bulletproof insert that we're selling at the time. Putting that in your backpack that you take with you. Take a backpack with you and put that in there. At least you got something to hide behind if the government's not going to protect you. And so I was called on the carpet by Daily Beast. Oh, look at this. He's shamelessly plugging bullet protection after this mass shooting. Merchandising on that. Well, I'm telling people how to protect themselves. I'm telling you, you ought to protect yourself by preparing. Get non-GMO food while you still can. I mean, it may not be the coronavirus shortage. You may not be able to get anything that's grown without being contaminated by Bayer and Monsanto in the future. You can get it right now, InfoWarsStore.com. Prepare for your future. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Today we have Super Tuesday. We got about 34% of the delegates are going to be decided today or sometime this week after the Democrats are figuring out how to count the votes. They keep counting until they get the result that they want. And I think we know the result that they want now is Joe Biden. So we may have to wait for this to be massaged by the Democrats to get the preferred results. But let's take a quick look at the candidates here. You're all familiar with the TV game show, Family Feud, right? And they'll get the people up there, the big board, and they'll ask them a question. And then they got to come up with like a single word. And then they'll tell them, they took a survey of their audience. And, depending on which word that you pick, you can get either 0 points or, if you got the one that, gets 8 points or 12% of the people said this one or whatever, that's how they score it, right? I remember recently they had a woman go on and they said, that says, Popeye's favorite food. And she goes, boom, hits it. Chicken. It meant spinach. They meant the cartoon character. Anyway, So let's play Political Feud, because we had the AP go out and do a survey, just like Family Feud. And they asked lots of people, Democrats, independents, and Republicans, describe in one word these political candidates. So let's run down the list and see what people came up with. All right, we'll start out with President Trump. Democrats said jerk. Independents said liar. Republicans said president. Get used to it. Then we go to Sanders. Democrats said old. Independents said old. Republicans said socialist. I think we're starting to develop an idea of who has a grasp on reality as we're looking at this. Anyway, next one, Biden. Democrats said old. Independents said old. Republicans said old. Again, correct, Republicans. You got it. Warren. Democrats said smart. Independents said liar. Republicans said liar. Yeah, she's smart, liar, liar. Bloomberg. Democrats said rich. Independents said rich. Republicans said rich. Oh, by the way, liar was the second choice for both independents and Republicans for Bloomberg. The third choice for Republicans on Bloomberg was, for independents was arrogant. Yeah, that's very good as well. Buttigieg. Democrats said smart. Independents said gay. Republicans said gay. Klobuchar. Democrats said smart. They just think all of their people are smart, don't they? Maybe it's because they're so dumb. Anyway, Klobuchar, they thought was smart. Get that through your head. That's kind of scary. And then independents said woman. They were able to discern that. The independents, they've got that down. And then Republicans said centrist. Stare. Democrats said rich. Independents said inexperienced. Republicans said inexperienced. I think the answer to that is loser. All right. We're going to take a look at what's going on. As we look at this, where are we on Super Tuesday? Well, we've got Sanders with a 13-point lead in North Carolina. We have Politico telling us that he has a lead across when they average out the support across the different states, that Sanders is ahead. But it doesn't work that way. We still have delegates allocated on a state-by-state basis. So it makes absolutely no sense to average the support of the polls across this. We'll have to see what happens on a jurisdiction-by-jurisdiction basis. And again, it's one of the reasons why these minor candidates all bailed out, because according to Democrat rules, you don't get 15%, you don't get anything. And that's what basically happened to Stare, the rich loser this week. So when we come back, we're going to take a look at the 48 hours of Biden. Enjoy it while you can, Joe. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Yes, today is Super Tuesday, and as the Hill is reminding us, Joe Biden's support across the country has risen by 7 points after winning South Carolina. They said prior to South Carolina, Sanders was at 32%, Biden was at 19%, but after South Carolina, it's now Sanders 29 and Biden 26, very close. And this was done before the endorsements that happened in the last 48 hours. And again, they're talking about an average of polling from the 14 Super Tuesday states. Sanders leads by a wider margin. Again, all of these national polls and polls across the different states, I think I said in the last segment, that it was from Politico. No, this is actually from The Hill. It doesn't really mean anything. It means that this is going to be done state by state. That's the way the elections are run, in spite of what the Democrats and the mainstream media want to tell you. When we look at what's going on with MSNBC, it turns out, and if you want to know what happened to Chris Matthews, this is what I think happened to Chris Matthews. MSNBC's owners are showering Joe Biden with campaign cash. And you say, well, why did they fire Chris Matthews? Because he didn't like Bernie Sanders. And again, it's not whether you like Marxism or you don't like Marxism. You can't show the people what you're about. That's the whole essence of politics at the national level. You have to hide your real agenda. And so the Democrats have a problem with Bernie Sanders, not because his policies are any different than Joe Biden, the moderate, or Booty Marx, the guy who is probably the hardest core Marxist out there, Booty Gay. No, it is, you can't be upfront about it. You got to hide it, like Pete the Cheat. Don't tell people that your daddy was a Marxist. Don't tell people that you studied under a Marxist at Harvard. Don't tell people that you want to overthrow the hegemony of the bourgeoisie. Don't tell people that. You tell them you're a moderate. And see, Chris Matthews is telling people that he hated Bernie Sanders. Telling people that Bernie Sanders was a communist. You're not supposed to say that either. When your owners are supporting Biden with massive amounts of cash and doing everything they can on the network to subtly promote Biden. I think that's really the issue. I don't think it's what he had to say in terms of women. I don't think it's an anti-woman bias. I think they had to get rid of him to cover up the anti-Bernie bias of MSNBC. Anyway, that's just my opinion. As MSNBC's owners give that much money to among the influential cable news channels, MSNBC really has opposed Bernie with people like Chris Matthews. So he must go. And this was written before Chris Matthews was forced out in the last 24 hours. Columbia Journalism Review's public editor found that Biden had received the bulk of MSNBC's 2020 election coverage. And not only that, but he'd also received the bulk of the money coming from the executives and vice presidents at Comcast that own MSNBC. He's received 17 large campaign contributions from executives and vice presidents there. Of all of the other candidates still in the race, only Booty Gay received any Comcast executive contributions. Now, remember that, because Booty Gay just officially endorsed Biden for president, and Biden really endorsed Booty Gay. He said, I'd ask him to be a part of my administration if I'm nominated. And not only that, but he went on to say that he reminds him of his son, Bo. And I looked at that and said, did Biden just doubt Bo is gay? I don't know what to make of that. He says, I don't think I've ever done this before, but he reminds me of my son, Bo. And that's the highest compliment that I can give any man or woman, except for maybe making him your running mate, which seems to be the way that they're headed here. Because, you know, Booty Gay is everything that Biden is not. He's young, he's articulate, and he's gay, which may be why they were meeting at a Texas chicken joint, you know, not a sausage summit like he did with Zuckerberg. Yeah, Booty Gay and Zuckerberg with their sausage summit back in Indiana. I think Biden insisted that they stop at the thigh. And so they went to a tiny crowd at a restaurant in Dallas called Chicken Scratch. See, President Trump is having rallies in stadiums with tens of thousands of people. And Biden goes with one of the other big candidates. And supposedly his endorsement makes so much difference to Joe Biden. And they go to the Chicken Scratch restaurant in Dallas. He did have a rally in Dallas as well yesterday, as I pointed out. You know, the shots were coming at Bernie Sanders from all directions. It was like Dealey Plaza. You had endorsement from Booty Gay. You had the endorsement from Klobuchar. And you had the endorsement from the trans-Hispanic himself, Beto O'Rourke. Yes, Robert Francis O'Rourke, who goes by the pseudonym, I guess we could call it the nom de guerre. His name of war, Beto. Yes, that's right. Even though I'm thoroughly Irish, I will present myself as Hispanic. And after Amy endorsed him, he didn't say she reminds me of my daughter or even my wife. He said that's why she's one of the most effective senators in the U.S. Senate. Who is, by the way, it was a shrewd move for her to get out because it was looking like she was not going to do very well in the presidential primary in her own home state. And it looks like maybe Elizabeth Warren won't do that well either. We'll have to see tonight what happens. And then you had Beto, Robert Francis O'Rourke, say, ladies and gentlemen, tomorrow, March the 3rd, 2020, I will be casting my vote for Joe Biden. The man in the White House is an existential threat to our country, to democracy, to free and fair elections. These are the people who just have spent the last 3 years trying to overthrow our last election, which was done fairly and according to the Constitution, more or less. I mean, we've never really followed the rules of the Electoral College, but we still have the Electoral College, and we still have the apportionment of votes on a state-by-state basis. So that's what they object to, right? They're not saying, oh, let's go back and do it the way the Constitution says. They said, no, let's get rid of it. Let's go to direct democracy. No, we don't want that. The founders didn't want that either. We need somebody who can defeat him, and in Joe Biden, we have that man. Do we? Really? I'm not so sure about that. You know, it's when you look at this, I mean, we've had 8 men out, haven't we? And all we're left with is Sleepy Joe. You know, all these Democrats are gone. And it's not, we're not left with Shoeless Joe. We're left with Clueless Joe. I got to imagine that there's a lot of Democrats who are saying, say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. Say that this is not the only guy we have left. But as the Daily Mail reports, and it's kind of interesting, their observation on this. As you've got Buttigieg endorsing Joe Biden, they say the moderates are going all out to stop Bernie Sanders. Now, when he got the endorsement from O'Rourke, Biden said, you're going to take care of the gun problem with me. And remember, it was, Beto O'Rourke who said, and this is what I find interesting. This is from the Daily Mail. Remember, this is Piers Morgan's publication now. Piers Morgan, who crashed his career by trying to destroy the Second Amendment here in America, lecturing us about gun control all the time. And the Daily Mail points out that O'Rourke told a Democratic primary debate last year, hell yes, I'm going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. And then the Daily Mail reports, his campaign collapsed soon after. Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. Now, they're not going to tell you that's why. I'll tell you that's why. One of the reasons why. And so, turning to O'Rourke, Biden said, I'm going to guarantee you, this is not the last you're seeing of this guy. You're going to take care of the gun problem with me. You're going to be the one who leads this effort. I'm counting on you. These are the moderates who are now saying, we're going to destroy the Second Amendment, and we're going to use any force, including everything that we can with the military. We're going to send in the National Guard in Virginia. We're going to, according to Eric Swalwell, we're going to use nukes against you. According to Joe Biden, we'll use the jets against you and so forth. These are the people who want a civil war. They don't want a constitution. They are absolutely contemptuous of the Bill of Rights. And they are the moderates in the Democrat Party. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Let's take a look at Joe Biden, because he's had some more gaffes. Today is Super Tuesday, and we're told that all the moderates are getting behind him, except, as I point out, these people are not moderate by any means. We're going to take a look at the immoderate statements of Michael Bloomberg as well. And then coming up in the next segment, we're going to be talking to Eric Peters about whether or not they should be able to confiscate your transportation, your private transportation, because they're confiscating everything else, right? I mean, these are people going to tell you what you can eat, what you can drink. They're going to tax it, or they're going to steal it, or they're going to ban it. They're going to tell you where and how you can live. They've got the little micro apartments already planned, and that's part of the UN 2030 agenda. And then they're going to tell you what you can read, what you can say on social media. They're going to shut down the news organizations that they don't like InfoWars, if they get their chance. And then they are going to be beaming in their narrative to you. And they'll all be saying the same thing, just like they used to do back in the days of broadcast television. You had 3 networks, and they'd all cover the same stories, and they all had the same things to say about that. Funny, isn't it? It's almost like they're getting fed that information by the CIA or something. Anyway, we have President Trump zeroing in on Joe Biden and calling him out yesterday on this particular statement by Joe Biden. It's not, you know, when you hear this, I have to wonder if Joe Biden would be locked up by Elizabeth Warren for election tampering because of this clip right here, video clip number two.
The most important vote to make sure there's not going to be any problem is that you send back Sheila Jackson Lee as the nominee without any question. That's the most important. Look, tomorrow's Superstar Tuesday, and I want to thank you all. I tell you what, I'm rushing ahead, aren't I? And I want to speak directly to Democrats.
Yeah, okay, you get the idea. See, one of the things that Elizabeth Warren really focused on, she said a lot of people are putting out fake news to try to interfere with the elections. You know, they go to rallies like this. We have black candidates and black voters. And you tell them, don't forget to vote on Thursday when the election is on Tuesday. Now, she's saying that people who say things like that ought to be locked up. Is she going to lock up Joe Biden or will she give him a pass for senility? Yes, don't forget to go vote on Super Thursday. All you Biden supporters, don't forget. Tomorrow, voters in states across the nation are voting on Super Thursday. And President Trump came out and said he's constantly naming the wrong state. He said, can you imagine if I said Super Thursday? It'd be over, right? It would be over, said President Trump. But he goes, he's constantly naming the wrong state. He said, once that happens, you might as well leave the state. And then The Hill, reporting these remarks, jumps in to Biden's defense to attack President Trump and said Trump, who repeatedly has made false or misleading statements, well, according to their opinion, and then saying, and he has misspelled words on Twitter. No, that's that's really more of a function of Twitter and thumbs, right? Just calm down, The Hill, and have another cup of coffee. And you want to say that that's a sign of senility with President Trump, or is that a sign of typing with your thumbs? Anyway, President Trump, as we showed yesterday, that clip, and it was shown to Chris Wallace, showed that to Joe Biden. First time he'd been on Fox News for 13 years. And I don't think he'll be back in 13 years, one way or the other. he showed the clip of President Trump saying, you know, old Joe is not going to be running the presidency. They're going to have him in a home somewhere. You should have called it the White Home. He's going to be going to the White Home, and you're going to have the radical, crazy lefties who are going to be running the place. And he played that for Joe Biden, and Joe Biden just like, oh, God bless that guy, or Lord bless him, or whatever it is. He used that twice, and then he said, you know, that stable genius, he used that twice while he was saying he would never use labels to label anybody because, you know, the president has labeled Joe Biden as Sleepy Joe. And then as they're signing off, he says to Chris Wallace, he goes, thanks, Chuck. And he goes, well, thanks, but it's Chris, not Chuck. And he goes, oh. He goes, it's just so early in the morning, says Sleepy Joe. It's just so early in the morning. I don't know how you do it every day. This is their preferred candidate. This is the candidate that the Democrat establishment wants to put forward against President Trump. And here's one more thing he's got. As he tried to talk about the Declaration of Independence, and I know this is a very uncomfortable topic for Joe Biden. He does not like to talk about natural rights, as I've pointed out many times. That was his big beef with Clarence Thomas, the idea that Clarence Thomas would talk about natural rights. You know the things that are mentioned in the Declaration of Independence? The idea that as human beings, we have certain natural rights that are endowed on every human being by our Creator. We don't get them granted to us by government because that is anathema, heresy to Joe Biden. Everything that you have in life is a government-granted privilege, according to Joe Biden. So he had this to say. As he was trying to discuss the Constitution, let's play video clip number one.
All these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by go, you know the thing.
Yeah, the headlines say, you know, they're all created by you know the thing. Now, is he talking about the Declaration of Independence? A lot of people say, well, look at him, Flub. He can't remember the title of the Declaration of Independence. I don't know if that's it. Or maybe he just couldn't remember the Creator, God. Because, see, Joe Biden doesn't believe in the Declaration of Independence. He doesn't believe in natural rights. He doesn't believe in a creator that gave us those natural rights. He doesn't believe in God. So I don't know which one of those things he was struggling to say. This is the guy who claimed that that guns had killed 150 million Americans since 2007. Babylon Bee laughed at that and said, Joe Biden tells everybody he's the only American left alive after guns have destroyed everybody else. Yeah, maybe what he was doing. You know, when I look at his proposals, these moderates like him and Beto, maybe the 150 million Americans killed by guns, maybe that's what they're thinking about doing. Not what has happened with private guns, because that has not anywhere come close to that. But maybe that's what they're thinking about doing. 150 million Americans killed by their gun confiscation civil war that they want to set off. And while we're talking about the civil war, let's play a clip from that arrogant, rich Bond villain, Bloomberg, who will be on the ballot for the first time today. We'll see how he does. Video clip number three.
You justify pushing for more gun control when you have an armed security detail that is likely equipped with the same firearms and magazines that you seek to ban the common citizen from owning. Does your life matter more than mine or my family's or these people's?
All right. Yeah, and he goes on to explain how his life does mean more than that man or the common citizen.
I probably get 40 or 50 threats every week, okay? And some of them are real. That just happens when you're the mayor of New York City or you're very wealthy, and if you're campaigning for president of the United States, you get lots of threats. So
yeah. Let's hold it there. I don't want to hear any more from this arrogant SOB. Hopefully today will be the last that we see of him. It won't be the last that we hear of him, because he's going to constantly be hectoring us, selling agendas to take away our firearms, to take away our cars with his environmentalism. You know, that's a key. That's very, very dear to his heart. We're going to be talking to Eric Peters coming up in the next segment. We'll talk about how we're not going to let them take away our cars either. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Reverse engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Eric Peters, and you can find his website at epautos.com. You can also find him on Twitter, Libertarian Car G. Would be like car guy. And Eric Peters is our Libertarian Car Guy. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Oh, you bet, David. Thanks for having me on.
You know, I wanted to get your reaction to something that I saw tweeted out from one of the big three establishment auto press. This is coming out of Motor Trend. Show this tweet, guys. This picture, the most expensive Bentley you can buy, a $1.9 million Bentley Mulliner, is for the person who has everything. No, not that one. Show the tweet. I want to show the tweet up there.
Everything
show people
except
what
good taste.
Well, you know, I could probably buy about 200 of my used convertibles for what that for what that Bentley costs, and
right.
I think I'd rather have a fleet of 200 of them so I could save them when they ban internal combustion engines. But, you know, that's the thing that we're looking at here. When you look at these cars that are out there that are going, this is what the automotive press is now focusing on for the most part. Not on your site. I mean, you've got practical auto reviews of cars that we can still buy. But they focus on these super expensive cars that are $1 million, $2 million, and I understand that they're oddities and so forth, but it's getting to the point where it looks to me like that's the only kind of car. There it is right there. Thanks, guys, for getting that up. It looks to me like that's the only kind of car that the car companies are developing anymore. It's almost like nobody's going to have a car except the people like Bloomberg and Bernie who've got private jets to fly everywhere. It's going to be taking the status of a private jet or a yacht to have an automobile, isn't it?
Yeah, that. And the irony is they're not really that exclusive in a meaningful way. So this car is a $2 million car that has a 650-horsepower V12. Well, for about $70,000, I can go out and buy a Dodge Hellcat Challenger that has almost 800 horsepower.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And you know, if you're looking
at, I know people have done that.
And if you're looking at luxury, you can go out and spend, you know, 100K, let's say, on an S-Class Mercedes. That's 99% what that Bentley is. And frankly, and here's the real scoop story, if you get down to something like a loaded Camry that costs you about $35,000, in almost every meaningful way, it's as quote-unquote luxurious as that $2 million car.
Exactly, exactly. And yet, it's not really even an issue of consumerism. It's what we're going to be allowed to have.
Yes.
Because this week, you know, I'm going through looking at the automotive news and so forth, and I'm seeing one article after the other about the fact that GM has just made their last Chevy Impala as they're shutting down Detroit's Hamtramck assembly line. And, of course, that also affects a lot of engines and other internal combustion. Because this is they're going to shut down this plant because it's making internal combustion engines, and they want to tool it over to all electric. That's what's really behind this. And then at the same time, same day, I see that Chrysler is shutting down their minivan production. And again, that seems to be more of a marketing decision. I don't have a problem with things going out of style because people don't want to buy them. I have a problem with things going out of style because they're going to start making things that people don't want to buy.
Well, the irony is there's no market for the electric cars, which they're ramping up the production of. And there is a market for the non-electric cars that they're closing the manufacturing assemblies for.
That's right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, on that, I think it was that same assembly at Hamtramck. They had a newly designed Cadillac that had a really high-performance engine, and it was made there. And they introduced that, and they couldn't take the orders quickly enough. And they had a big backlog of orders, and they said, all right, well, we're going to make some of them, but we're only going to make a couple hundred, and we'll move their production to the Corvette factory because they're still doing internal combustion engines.
Well, just
basically shut it off. They didn't care that there was demand out there. This tells you that this is an agenda that's being forced upon us, not only by the government, the federal government, but it's being forced on the federal government by the United Nations and all of those. It's just flowing down the hill, UN to the federal government to the corporations who are going to be the handmaids for this agenda.
Yeah, and the car companies in the back rooms have taken the decision that, well, there isn't any market for these electric cars. However, the government is mandating them in multiple ways via outright production manufacturing quotas and also by regulations that effectively force a lot of electric cars to be built. So they're counting on that. They're counting on the internal combustion-powered car being made impossible to buy anymore so that you'll have no choice but to buy an electric car. That's why they're pouring all this money into it.
That's right. And it's really what, you know, GM wants to do. You got the promotional video. Now you guys can show the promotional video, some of that B-roll. And again, you know, they're showing, you know, cars without steering wheels. They're showing people sitting in a completely enclosed car with digital windows. In other words, you don't have a window that you can look out of. And then they're looking there. You can see it right there. They're watching a big screen TV in their living room that's moving around, that's got them hermetically sealed, and they're able to watch Lego Batman.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then they're showing.
Yeah,
what's that?
What else are you going to do?
Exactly. Exactly. I just, you know, quite frankly, I would much rather drive than to watch the movies that are being produced by Hollywood now.
They have been, there's been a systematic effort underway for quite some time now to take the driver out of the equation from a variety of points of view and to make driving itself aggravating and annoying. I've become convinced that some of the latest styled safety aids and fuel economy aids are designed to make it aggravating to drive a car. That automated stop-start thing that most new cars have now, it's super annoying. And you get to the point where you just don't want to deal with it anymore and would rather just be in the back seat watching the Lego trucks go by.
Yeah, you talked about that in a recent article. You called it the automated start-stop. You called it by its acronym, ASS.
Yes, it's hilarious that they didn't see that, you know, that the marketing people didn't notice that that was going to happen.
Yeah, I think they probably did, but they don't really care at this point because they're not really even marketing anything. They don't care what people want. It's what the government wants that counts.
That's it. Well, it's regulatory capture and crony capitalism. They think if you have no choice, you're going to sign up for these electric cars. Though I still don't understand how they think people are going to absorb the 30% to 50% increase in the cost of transportation. And that's a probably very conservative calculation that will attend this transition to electric cars that they're trying to foist on us.
You know, as we see the last assembly line, other than, I guess, perhaps you still got the Corvette assembly line that's there, and they shifted that one Cadillac over to it. You have a review of the 2020 Cadillac CT4. I mean, talk a little bit about that as they're shutting down Buick and these other automobiles to move over to electric. You know, what's your take on the latest Cadillac? Is that something that they are going to continue with?
It's a tale of two cities. On the, you know, on the one hand, you've got all this bad stuff, and then on the other hand, you have some good stuff. You have Cadillac putting out a couple of new sedans that are rear-wheel drive, that are very powerful, that are the antithesis of this electric car boondoggle. But you wonder how long it's going to be before they pull the plug on this. You know, these vehicles have been in development for a number of years, so they might be just sort of the vaporous fumes of several years ago, and they're going to let them come out, but they're not going to continue them for very long, and then they're just going to abandon them, which is something that GM is famous for doing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was the thing that really surprised everybody was that new Cadillac that everybody's like, oh, look at this. You know, where do I get one of those? And, you know, the Cadillac fans or whatever, and they just shut it down. I mean, this is the female CEO that they've got now, I guess.
That's right. Well, everything is going to come down to what happens this year, whether Trump is reelected and what the regulatory situation is going to be by 2021. If Trump is defeated and we see electric car mandates imposed at the federal and state level, we see CAFE go up, the fuel economy mandate go up to 45 or 50 miles per gallon, that's it. It's going to be game over.
Yeah, yeah. And that's why, you know, Obama put that in. And that's a very strong point in President Trump's favor. It's just hanging by a thread. And that's the sad thing about it, because, you know, even if President Trump gets elected for another 4 years, all that does is push their agenda back by 4 years. And I still think that they'll be able to mandate all this to get it in there by their deadline of 2030, because that's the deadline that they've been given by the UN. President Trump would be out by 2024 at the latest. And then at that point, you know, what do? Because we've allowed these kind of power structures, we've allowed this kind of fascist merger between corporations and government to control the internet, to control the press, our free speech, and now our transportation. We'll be right back with Eric Peters, epautos.com. Stay with us. All right, welcome back. We've got clowns on the left coast, and we've got jokers on the right coast. And we're stuck in the middle, just trying to hang on to, we're bitter clingers, trying to hang on to our guns and to our cars and to our individual liberty. And we're talking to Eric Peters, the Libertarian Car Guy. As a matter of fact, that's his handle on Twitter, Libertarian Car G, as many characters as fit in there. His website is epautos.com. And, you know, Eric, we have Super Tuesday today, and the Democrats are worried to death about Bernie Sanders because he is an open Marxist and, talking about Castro. If anybody wants to get some good vintage cars, you can find them in Cuba because they froze all of them. They've got an amazing collection of 1959 cars because that's when their economy froze at that point. But just like his colleague, Fidel, Bernie has floated an idea that he wants to nationalize the energy grid and run it from Washington because he's such an expert at these things. And at the same time, he wants to eliminate gas and petroleum, all petroleum products. So I don't really know what he's going to run the grid on. Do you?
Well, we've got the choice between the senile mummy on the one hand and the senile Marxist on the other.
That's right. This is absolutely amazing. But, he's going to nationalize the power grid, and then he's not going to have any sources of power for the power grid. Well, I mean, over and over again, we talk to these people, and we ask them, you know, what's your favorite source of power? It's like, well, electricity, because it's clean. That's not a source. It's a product.
Yeah. So many people don't understand some of the basic elemental aspects of this issue, and that is why this year is so critical. I think if we get four more years of Trump, a lot of this scam is going to be exposed, particularly with regard to electric cars. People are going to discover that it is not an improvement, that it's a reduction in their mobility at an increased cost. And I think the whole thing could come undone. And that is why it's so important to keep this thread from snapping.
Yeah, it needs a little bit of time for people to look a little bit more closely at this. But we've got this case of a 21-year-old here in Austin. He didn't quite do a cannonball run. I think that would have taken too long. He merely wanted to go from Austin to Chicago. And it took him 36 hours because he had to keep stopping every 200 miles.
That's about halfway across the country. I can tell you, after I got out of college, I drove straight across the country, not exactly at cannonball speeds, but I did it in 3 days. So, you know, and that's, what is it, 2,800 miles coast to coast?
Yeah, probably. Well, he's just going from Austin to Chicago.
Yeah, so it's considerably less.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You know, when they when President Trump went down to NASCAR, I thought that was a brilliant move. And took the beast around the track. It's a pace car. And the left was freaking out. They were saying, look at this. Can you imagine how much carbon he's burning? Well, they never talk about, you know, Obama taking trips on, you know, Air Force One and so forth. And they don't complain about President Trump taking trips on Air Force One. But if he takes the beast for a lap or two around, oh, we got to stop that. And I said, well, you know what? If President Trump doesn't win and these guys win, we're not going to have any more Daytona 500s because you would take a couple of laps and then the rest of the race you'd be sitting there.
Right.
You know, the Le Mans, 24 hours of Le Mans, you don't have a couple of hours worth of racing. The rest of it would be spent in the pits with them recharging the car.
Right. And you know, what would be the enjoyment factor of listening to the sounds of silence for 2 hours?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, this is what is involved here. But, you know, one of the things that was really scary about this is that this guy would drive for 36 hours, and again, most of that was spent charging up from Austin to Chicago using autopilot. And we just had the head of the National Traffic Safety Association really come down on Elon Musk for putting out autopilot.
Finally.
I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah. But I don't think he's going to do anything, just like the SEC. You know, the SEC was very upset about it, but they gave him a little hand slap. And I don't think the NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Association, I don't think they're going to do anything about it either, because he is protected by so many people in the federal government, as I was pointing out, because he's using SpaceX to do live fire drills with the military. The military-industrial complex is using Elon Musk to enact their, you know, their weapon control system, their 5G control system and surveillance system. So he gets a free pass on all this, doesn't he?
Up to a point, but it's getting to be so blatant. And that's one of the upsides of having all this tech stuff everywhere and having social media and YouTube and so on. People are becoming aware of these serial problems with Tesla cars, and it's getting hard to stamp that lump on the rug flat. So not only are they having to say something about it, they might actually have to do something about it. And besides which, Elon has served his purpose of normalizing and sexing up the electric car.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, he's still getting special favors, as you pointed out in your article, the Elon exemption passes. Tell us about that. What's going on in Colorado?
Yeah, well, it's not just Elon. It's also any manufacturer of an electric car will get an exemption from the law. Now, this is in just one state. But many states have a law that requires you to buy your next new car from a dealership. And it's a crony capitalist thing that's been around for a long time.
Yeah,
And I, you know, I'm opposed to this law. I think it's an obnoxious law. I think you should have the free choice. If you want to buy your car directly from the manufacturer at the railhead to save some money, and that should be your option. That's competition. That's a good thing.
That's right.
But
and the dealers, if they want to compete with that, they just do it by offering other services or something like that,
right,
rather than having it legislated in.
What they've done is to grant an exemption to manufacturers of electric cars only, which means Tesla and this new truck operation, Rivian, which will permit them to direct sell to the buyer, which is just another form of subsidization for these electric cars, because the regular dealers, regular manufacturers have to eat the cost of having that physical store, having the salespeople, having all that goes with that, that they have to factor into the price that they can sell a new car for, whereas Elon Musk can just skip all that and sell you a car for quote-unquote less, but it really isn't less because of this artificial manipulation of the market.
So if it's an electric car manufacturer, they're given a pass. Everybody else has to sell through dealerships only. It kind of reminds me of what's going on with all this ride-sharing stuff, because I have done interviews with cab drivers when I've traveled you know, for InfoWars, talking about the extensive regulation that they set up for taxi drivers. I mean, you've got taxi drivers who are committing suicide because they invested their life savings into buying a taxi medallion.
$100,000 in New York City.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's worthless. I think it's even more than that in some jurisdictions. I was talking to a guy in Washington, and he said, yeah, they've got their special group of inspectors who go around, and your car can't be any older than this, and they basically come in with a white glove to examine the interior part of it and everything. They got all kinds of regulations for them, but nothing at all for the ride-sharing company.
That's right. And the reason for that is that they're using that as a method to get people to part with their car.
Yes.
In the short term.
Exactly. Exactly. And you've got an article about this, ride-sharing's broken promises. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, it's hilarious. You know, one of the arguments that was brought forward with this ride-sharing was that it'll reduce congestion in cities and urban areas. And by dint of that, it will also reduce all these dreadful carbon dioxide emissions that are befouling the planet. Well, as it turns out, people don't particularly want to share a ride. They will get an Uber individually, so you've got more of these Uber and Lyft cars running around, and unlike you and I, when we drive into a city, we go to work or we shop, we park our car, and it's off the road. These Uber and Lyft guys are driving around looking for fares or going from one fare to another, and the net result is more traffic.
Yeah, exactly. But that doesn't matter to them.
Right?
You know, they just had one of the most heavily trafficked bridges in New York. And they said, well, you know, it's just turned into a parking lot. And our solution is that we're going to take where it's now three lanes going each direction and a very heavy, toll price that you have to pay. We're going to cut those three lanes in each direction down to two mm-hmm. in each direction just to make it more miserable for people so that they will get out of their cars.
That's right.
That's
they
the
call
contempt
that road dieting.
Yeah, exactly. A road diet. Exactly. And traffic calming and all these other euphemisms of control that they're putting out on us. It's absolutely amazing. But look, folks, if they take away your ability to communicate, they take away your ability to shoot, and they take away your ability to move, they have you under their complete control. That's what the military always tries to do when it takes over a particular country. So it's very important. Again, Eric Peters, epautos.com. You'll find articles there about real cars that you can still buy for the time being. And you'll also find the bigger picture about how liberty is affected by your ability to do transportation. Thank you so much for joining us, Eric.
Oh,
appreciate
thank you,
that.
David. Always have a good time.
Thank you. And folks, we're just about out of time here. Before we go, I just want to remind you about the products we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Again, so many people have finally awakened to the need to prepare. This transcends whatever is going to happen with the coronavirus. But you better be concerned. What I'm concerned about is the stage that we're getting into right now. And that is the fact that they're rolling out millions of testing kits. They're going to start testing people. They're making preparations for how they're going to quarantine people. And they're about ready to roll out their vaccines, they tell us. Many different sources. I don't want to go through that. And I want to make sure that I've got a safe source of food, non-GMO, made in America. It's going to last for 25 years. Make sure you go to InfoWarsStore.com. Get products to make sure you've got clean water. You've got a supply of food, and you have products that are going to protect your health if you're concerned about that. And you should be concerned about that. InfoWarsStore.com. Thank you. That's it for today's broadcast. Oh, one more thing. Judicial tyranny must be destroyed.